American Cassette Ministries is pleased to provide you with another presentation from the 2005 General Youth Conference in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Thousands of committed Seventh-day Adventist young people came together as an army on a mission to proclaim the three angels' messages to the whole world in this generation. They believe now is the time.
Good afternoon. Let's begin our session with a word of prayer, and then we'll get into our topic. Dear Lord, we thank you so much for all that you've done for us. We thank you for bringing us here safely. We thank you for the opportunity that we have to discuss complicated, interesting ideas and try to devise from your word, from the example that you set, the way that we as individuals should go and the positions that we should hold. Lord, we ask your Holy Spirit to come upon each one of us. I ask the Holy Spirit to come upon me as we spend this precious time together. Amen. Well, good afternoon. Let me just briefly introduce who I am and what I've come to do. My name is James Standish. I'm an attorney by training. Nick and I have known each other. Nick, do you know that we've known each other 20 years now? You think about that.
That was when I was 5 years old.
Yeah. 20 years, you know. Nick was a sort of an upstart intellectual at college. And what would you say I was, Nick? I wouldn't say intellectual, would you? A sort of an agitator, a campus agitator. We were both at Newbold College over in England. And that's where we first met. And in the interim, our lives have sort of crisscrossed in different ways. Nick eventually went to Columbia University to go to law school. Graduated in the top 10% of his class, is one of our great intellectual forces in our church, and I have a prediction here, and that is in the future, Nick will be one of the preeminent voices on how church and state should relate here in the United States. That's my prediction. I'm not a prophet, but, and you guys can say you saw him when. I also went to law school. I went to Georgetown in Washington, D.C., and now work representing our church on Capitol Hill. That work includes discussing our positions and our beliefs and our positions with members of Congress, with their staff, and also with folks at the White House and the State Department, and occasionally with folks at the Department of Justice. It's a very interesting position. It's a position I'm very honored to hold because, in effect, I'm there to represent you. And it's a responsibility I take very, very seriously. You and the other 14 million or so Seventh-day Adventists around the world. Recently, I've been working on a very interesting case. It came from an individual in France. He called me up in my office and he said, "We need some help. We have a Seventh-day Adventist Christian who has fled from Iran where he was severely beaten. He fled to a neighboring country. I won't say the name because I do not want to reveal too much about this case because it's very sensitive. He fled to a neighboring country and there he asked for asylum. Do you know what asylum is? Asylum is the right to say, I can get residency in a third country, in a different country than my own, because if I go back, I have a well-founded fear that I will be persecuted. This gentleman is a convert from Islam to Christianity. In Iran today, in the Islamic Republic of Iran today, it is punishable by death to convert from Islam to Christianity. This is not just Seventh-day Adventists or Christian propaganda. This is in the reports that come out from the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, a congressional commission. I was just looking at that report the other day. It's a serious thing to have somebody say to you, we have this Adventist, this Christian, he is in a third party, he's about to be deported back to the country of Iran where we believe he's going to be killed. What would you do if somebody called you up and said that? Well, this is right before Christmas. There's not a lot you can do. Washington is closing down around you. And I can tell you, I had to think for a little while. I had to think, what are we going to do for this guy? It's not a joke. if he is sent back to Iran, there is a good chance he will be killed for no crime other than taking the name of Jesus Christ. You know, friends, I'm proud that we are not a church that only preaches that we should have fidelity to Jesus Christ, but that when people get into trouble for that fidelity, we're there to stand by them. Friends, we need to care just as much about getting people into our church. You know, we care a lot about that. We need to care just as much about how they're treated once they're in our church. This is a problem that's not just in overseas. We have a problem in the United States with our members being fired left, right, and center from their jobs. We have over 1,000 Seventh-day Adventists fired from their jobs for no other reason than keeping the Sabbath per year here in the United States. That's 3 a day. Some of you might say, well, go find another job. It's not always that easy. I've had people who have been fired, they've lost their health benefits, they've lost, of course, their income, they've ended up impoverished. One woman wrote to me from her home where she and her son were sleeping, from a friend's home, where she and her son were sleeping on the living room floor. She'd been fired from her job when her boss refused to accommodate her Sabbath keeping. She fell behind on her mortgage. This was in the Washington, D.C. area. It's not cheap to live there, you know. I don't know how many of you have been watching. Some of you are hoping for the housing bubble to pop. I'm hoping for it to keep on going because I actually own a house. Let me tell you, it's not easy to keep ahead of a mortgage in a metropolitan area. She eventually fell behind. Her house was repossessed by the bank. She was evicted, and she was sleeping on the floor with her child of a friend's home in the United States of America. It's incredible. It's incredible. And of course, there are many, many other instances that we deal with, sadly, on a daily basis in our office. What do I do when I get a call like the call I got from this brother in France about a Iranian who'd converted to Seventh-day Adventism and was in a third country? The first thing I do after I finish praying is to think, who in Congress is going to be my friend on this issue? This isn't an issue in the United States. It's an issue overseas. But when the U.S. speaks, friends, people listen. Not always listen in a good way. But in this case, the country in question was a country amenable to listening to the United States. I'll tell you what the first thing I did was. I picked up the phone and I called the office of Congressman Roscoe Bartlett. Now, many of you have heard of President Bartlett from the West Wing. That's a fictitious. How many of you have heard of Congressman Roscoe Bartlett? Some of you have. Why would I call Congressman Roscoe Bartlett? Does anyone have any idea? Because he's a Seventh-day Adventist Christian. Now, you might ask, does that make any difference? Friends, one day I got castigated by his chief of staff. I got told off. And you know what the scolding I got was? Why are you going to the offices of non-believers when you need help, when we're here just waiting to help you? Does it make a difference to have someone in Congress who shares your views, who has it in his heart, what understands what we're talking about right off the bat? You bet. I didn't end. That was the first conversation I had. I also called a member of the United States Senate. How many Adventists in the United States Senate? Anyone know? Senator, we've never had a single Seventh-day Adventist senator. Thankfully, there are decent people who are of different denominational convictions who are helpful. And I'm not ashamed to tell you that the senator that I called is a Roman Catholic. And thank God, it touched the heart of that office. Then I also sent an email to one of our friends who is a member of the British House of Lords, who is very active on human rights issues. And another one of our friends, who's a new friend, who's a member of the European Parliament, because the country in question had some ties with Europe. All of those officers ended up sending letters to the government in question because our brother was incarcerated, ready to be deported back to Iran. And then I sent out an email to our email list asking people to pray. I think people must have prayed, because I sent out that request for prayer at about noon, and about 3 p.m. I got a message back from this country that said our brother is out of detention. It's an incredible story. The Friday before Christmas, I was in my home, actually in my bed. It was 10 p.m. and I got a call on my cell phone. I'd given my cell phone number to some folks who were over in the nation in question, and it was our brother on the phone. He was out, and he wanted to call up to say, thank you for the prayers. Tell the members of Congress, thank you. Tell the folks in Europe, thank you. And tell our brothers and sisters around the world, thank you for praying for me. I think one of the reasons why this case has hit me so personally is that while our brother was in prison, he missed his daughter. He missed his daughter dreadfully. But they couldn't bring his daughter to him because they didn't want to have his young daughter see him in prison. They thought it was going to be a picture of their father that she'd have on her mind for the rest of her life. I have a young daughter of my own. So when this gentleman's sister called me and told me that, this is before he was released, it just touched my heart. I tell you, it's a privilege to be able to work for God's people who are suffering persecution, isn't it? It's an opportunity. It's a wonderful thing. One day I know that God will reward those who have suffered for his name. Sometimes we become blasé about that. We say, oh, isn't it a wonderful thing? Maybe he should rejoice that he's being persecuted for Christ. And the Bible tells you to rejoice. That's true. But you try being persecuted. You try being separated from your family. You try being threatened to be with deportation to a nation that will kill you for no crime other than taking the name of Christ. It's a heavy, heavy thing. It's one that goes back to one of my favorite text in the Bible, which is in Hebrews. Hebrews 11:36. And this is talking about the people of faith throughout history. It says, still others had trials of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonments. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. Who was sawn in two? You know, one of the prophets was. So Jeremiah or Isaiah? I got both answers here. Let's get this straight. Isaiah. The plurality has it. Are we right on that, Nick? Okay. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destituted, afflicted, tormented. And this is the key phrase that I like to keep in mind. Of whom this world was not worthy. One of the things I love about what I do is to work on behalf of those of whom this world is not worthy. In the pursuit of that advocacy, it is very, very helpful to have folks who are committed Christians in power to assist. So let me ask you some more questions. We said that there were no Seventh-day Adventists in the United States Senate. I mentioned one member in the United States House of Representatives in the Congress. How many total do we have in the Congress? Does anyone know? we sort of had three for a little while, but not anymore. The sort of one died. One of them died, yes. So we have two. One is Sheila Jackson Lee, who represents Houston, a part of Houston, Texas. Have you heard of her? She seems to wear very colorful clothing at State of the Union addresses and sit by the aisle. I don't know how she does it every time, but I've noticed. So you can often see her there. And Roscoe Bartlett from Maryland. Those are the two. How many Seventh-day Adventists do we have on the Supreme Court? Well, it depends which nation's Supreme Court you're talking about. If you're talking about the highest court in Papua New Guinea, for example, we have five Seventh-day Adventists on the Supreme Court. Is that the right thing? Should we really have Seventh-day Adventists on the Supreme Court? Should we have people in Congress? You ever ask yourself that? That's what we're going to talk about for a few minutes together. It's a good question to ask, because if we shouldn't, then none of you should aspire to be in civil leadership. But if we should, maybe there's one of you today who will be the next Seventh-day Adventist member of Congress. Maybe the first Seventh-day Adventist member of the U.S. Senate. It's happened in New Guinea. It's happened in the Solomon Islands. It's happened in a number of nations around the world. Not yet in the United States. Well, let's start by asking ourselves why. Why are there so few Adventists who've ever been members of Congress? Have you ever asked yourself that? Is that Alex back there? It's good to see you. I just noticed you. Alex was an intern in my office. I haven't seen you for a few years. Sorry to have that aside, but I couldn't help it. It's great to see you, pal. Why have we had so few Adventists who've held public office in the United States, at least at the national level? Well, when I was decided to study law, I was found a very interesting response to my decision. Some people thought it was the most wonderful thing you could possibly do. But I had something happen to me at church that kind of reminded me that not every Adventist thinks that the law is an appropriate profession for a Christian. A woman came up to me in the lobby of my local church, and she said, "James, my daughter is interested in studying the law." Well, you know, when you're in law school, you get that question a lot. And what you expect them to say is, "How did you get into law school? What's a good law school to go to? What should you study as an undergrad? How do you get a good LSAT score?" All those kinds of things, right? Then she looked at me and she said, "But I told my daughter, Christians can't be liars." And she turned around and she walked away. Well, instead of sort of being a font of wisdom and, you know, I was very sort of embarrassed and taken aback. Holy, here I am in church, and I guess I've been told what I am. What I found is that Adventists are very ambiguous about people going into the law. But once you are a lawyer, every Adventist you've ever known wants to know you. I can't get out of a church without five different legal questions. Sometimes they're very sad questions, divorce, family law questions. I know nothing about it. But I guess I'm there and I'm free. And property law questions. Even, dare I say it, personal injury questions. I should send them to you, Nick. We could create a great practice. I'll just send everyone over to you. Adventists don't hate lawyers. In fact, they love lawyers, free lawyers. But the same thing happens with folks who want to go and work in public life. Not for everyone, but I know. I've had a number of young people come and work in my office, and often their families have this very ambiguous, or their church families have this very sort of ambiguous feelings towards this endeavor. Is this really something that we want you to do? Why don't you just study nursing? Can't you become a teacher? Doesn't the ministry interest you at all? And then many are given a lot of advice coming out of the spirit of prophecy to prove that a career in public life is no place for a Seventh-day Adventist young person. I had one intern who came and worked with me, and she said that she'd expressed some interest in not running for public office, but just working in some sort of government executive agency position. And her high school religion teacher had printed out pages of Spirit of Prophecy quotes to show her that she could not possibly consider this and remain a serious Seventh-day Adventist Christian. Well, let's talk just briefly about some of the advice that we get from the Spirit of Prophecy. I would say that the Spirit of Prophecy advice on this issue can be a little bit confusing. What I'm going to tell you, what I'm going to lay out, is that Ellen White says five things, I group it into five categories of things about politics, political life. Four of them are no's. And these are the areas that many people sort of focus on. Four of them are no's, and one of them is a yes. First of all, Ellen White makes absolutely clear that pastors, ministers of the gospel, are not to give up their calling to go and be politicians. If you think about going into the ministry and then running for public office, the Spirit of Prophecy, I think, is pretty clear that's not an appropriate thing to do. Secondly, she makes very clear that our schools and our institutions are not to be used to advance political agendas. Does that surprise you? Does it surprise you that that was an issue during her day? You bet it was. It was a tremendous issue over what standard should be used for the currency of the United States. Now, we've kind of forgotten all those discussions about whether we should use the silver standard or the gold standard, or whether we should have a floating currency. Do any of you know what I'm talking about here? Okay, a couple of you do. Some of you will remember when Winston Churchill had very strong feelings about Britain going back to the gold standard. Eventually, he was very good at war, maybe not so great at economics, because we've had a floating currency, as have most advanced countries since the war. But anyway, this was a big issue in society during Ellen White's day, and pastors and teachers were getting really heated up about it and thought that they should use their positions in the church to advance particular political perspectives. Well, if you've ever thought about using your position or Adventist institutions to advance the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or particular economic policies, I'd advise you to read Ellen White's writings on this. She's unambiguous. This is not appropriate. Does that surprise you? I don't think it should be surprising. We shouldn't have our churches dominated by issues that have nothing to do with our message. You can have very strong feelings about the monetary standards or the economic policies, but Ellen White, I think, makes very clear that is not the place for them. And she also talks about against the church getting involved in political questions. Now, this is an issue that these quotes are used, I think, very much out of context, because people say, well, we can't get involved in some of the issues of our day, even religious liberty issues, because they have a political component. Well, tomorrow we're going to be talking about this in some detail. But today I'll just leave with you this, and that is Ellen White was active in the prohibition movement, as we discussed, obviously a political issue. She even advised Adventists not only to vote on this issue, but do you know she advised them to vote even on Sabbath? To advance the prohibition cause. Make no mistake about it, too. The candidates that they were voting for had more than one issue. Right? It's not just like only prohibition candidates. They had other issues as well. Of course, so we're not to get involved in political questions. We'll talk about this in much greater detail tomorrow, but I'll posit to you just briefly that when she said that, she was referring primarily to not getting involved in issues that did not have a moral component or a religious component, in the sense that issues of religious liberty she told us to be involved in, issues of temperance in the public life. She even went so far as to say that we are not to obey the fugitive slave laws. You know that? You know what the fugitive slave law was? You guys know your history. There was a law that said if you had a slave come to your property, you were obligated under law to return that slave to the authorities. She said that we are not to obey that law. Very political statement. You don't think that was a big political, hot-button political issue? You bet. But we're not to get involved in political issues outside of our area of expertise and our religious mission. So all of these no's, no to pastors giving up the ministry and running for office, no to using the church for its and church institutions for political means, no to getting the church getting involved in political questions. She also talks against us becoming embroiled in political parties. You know, one of the saddest things that I have to deal with, friends, are Seventh-day Adventist Christians who write to me and want our church to take a particular political party's position. Don't you know the Democrats are supporting separation of church and state? Let's get behind them. Or the Republicans are out there fighting against this same-sex marriage. Let's get behind them in this particular, can't you see the sort of righteousness of their agenda? And I always reply to people, you know, friends, the Seventh-day Adventist Church isn't out here to follow. We're not out here to endorse. We're out here to lead, friends. And if other people want to endorse our positions, that's great. But we're not going to sign on to any political party. We don't see any political party as being pure. We don't see any political party as being righteous. And we're not about to subsume what we're all about to some worldly political agenda that every single party that you have a choice of is faulted in one way or another. Make no mistake about it. Even some who serve in public office would like to use the church to advance their particular political agenda. That makes me very, very sad. It's the problem of getting your priorities messed up. You know, political parties can be something almost like a religion. You know, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist and I'm a Democrat. Well, which are you first? I'm a Seventh-day Adventist and I'm a Republican. What are you first? Don't ask. And Ellen White, I think, talks very, very strongly against us getting embroiled, getting infatuated, fascinated with political parties, and I think that she's absolutely right. I tell you, I see every day people, I work with people every day who look at political parties as somehow being almost a tool to temporal salvation. They're not. They're all faulted. They're all got evil connivings going on behind them. Make no mistake about it. They're all worldly institutions. If you want to find salvation, friends, there's salvation to be found, but it's not in the Democratic or Republican parties. So these are all the no's that Ellen White lays out. You can get a stack this thick of Ellen White quotes, and if you have a person who wants to run for Congress, you can give them to them and say, look, no to political, no to this, no to that, no to the other. And at the end of that, people are going to say, whew, glad I became a nurse. Glad I went to the seminary, you know. Now let me make no mistake about it. My wife's a teacher, and you can touch lives wonderfully as a teacher, as a nurse, as a physician, as a pastor, as a theologian, absolutely. But some of you, maybe, are called to serve people in a different way. And to that, Ellen White had a very specific comment. We've had all the no's, haven't we? I want to come to the yes. Ellen White stated, she was giving an address to young people. I don't want to insult you by calling you young people. You know, I'm 40, and I'm still called a young person, and sometimes I ask myself, you know, you sort of change your role. You're either a young person or an old person. When do you just become a person, you know? Seems it's always pejorative, you know. He's this young guy, and there's that old guy, and I don't know. Maybe we're close, Nick. We might be flipping pretty soon, pal. This is what Ellen White said to young people in her day, and I want you to listen to this very carefully. I'm going to read it twice. Dear youth, have you thoughts that you dare not express, that you may sit in deliberative and legislative councils and help enact the laws of the nation? There is nothing wrong with these aspirations. Aim high and spare no pains to reach the standard. Let me read that one more time. Dear youth, have you thoughts that you dare not express, that you may one day sit in deliberative and legislative councils and help enact the laws for the nation? Who does that in America? I mean, are you ambiguous about what she's talking about here? Or do you understand what she's talking about? Dear youth, have you thoughts that you dare not express? You may sit in deliberative and legislative councils and help enact the laws for the nation. There is nothing wrong in these aspirations. Aim high and spend no pains to reach the standard. Is there a role for Seventh-day Adventists in civil leadership? There is a role for Seventh-day Adventists in civil leadership. You can't get a more unambiguous statement than that, can you? It's straight, it's clear, it's to the point. That's the first question that we have to ask when we think about serving in public life. Is there even a starting point to ask, is there a place? If there is a place, that doesn't answer whether there's a place for us, for you, or you, or you. It just tells us that there might be a place for you, and you, and you. The only way you can know whether God is calling you to a career in public service, either through elected office or through executive, working in executive agencies, is like any other calling that anyone could ever have. How do you know if you're called to be a teacher, a minister, a doctor, an engineer, an architect? You put your life in God's hands, friends, and you pray for His guidance. Don't assume that you know what God's plan is for your life. Let God lay out His plan through the Holy Spirit working on you. If you are called to work in public office, this only begs another question, and that is, what kind of leader will you be? I'd like to look just briefly at four biblical models for civil leadership. Four models of individuals in the Bible who were called to be civil leaders in one way or another, and how their lives can teach us a lesson. The first is the story of Saul. Remember, Saul was a man who was called to be king of Israel, the first king. And yet, his life ended very, very sadly, didn't it? He started off as God's servant and as his anointed one, and ended committing suicide in a losing battle after consulting the occult. There are some of us, we've seen this around the world, who are Seventh-day Adventist Christians who appear to be called for public office, and once they're there, they forget who took them there. And they become corrupted. And in the end, become a force for evil rather than a force for good. The second model, I say Saul is just the saddest. The saddest, one of the saddest stories you can ever read in the Bible. A man of great potential who just ended in such a sad, sad way. The second example is David. David was once again called by God. He was a righteous man who did many wonderful, wonderful things. And yet, at the pinnacle of his power, he used that power to abuse the people he was there to serve. We've had Seventh-day Adventist Christians who have gained power and then used that power to abuse those who they serve. It's a heavy thing. It's a heavy thing. But when David was confronted, he repented. He paid a price, didn't he? He paid a terrible, terrible price. But nonetheless, he did come back to God, and he was forgiven. Saul, who power corrupted, and he went, and he never regained his connection to God. David, who was also corrupted by power, but eventually was brought to humility and repentance. Esther is another case that's interesting. You know, Esther had no business being where she was, did she? Being a child of God, marrying a pagan king? Where do you find instructions to do that in the Bible? She had no business being there. And maybe the process that she went through to get there was also something that we would not want any Christian to do. Yet even though Esther was corrupted by the way that she got to where she was, once she was there, there was still something left. You know, not so much in the United States because we have so few, but overseas this is a big issue. You get Adventists in public life who are legislators or judges or what have you, who have compromised their faith. Maybe they've electioneered on Sabbath. Maybe they've done worse things. Maybe they've even taken bribes or been involved in other kind of corrupting activity or moral failure. But somehow, even though they were totally compromised in their rise to power, once they're in power, there's a little voice that comes back to them, a little conscience that starts speaking to them. And one thing that our church often has a hard time doing is, should we accept them back? Are they just too tainted for our ranks? And whenever I hear that, I always think of the story of Esther. Was she tainted? I think you could arguably say so. But thank God that when she was in the position of power that she was, she didn't forget a God and remembered that God at the time of need. The final kind of public figure, the final example, of course, is Daniel. Now, what do we know about Daniel? How many bad things are recorded about Daniel? What did Daniel do wrong? Well, I'm sure he sinned, right? Well, we know all have sinned. So somewhere in Daniel's life, there's something bad, right? But we just don't have it recorded in the Bible. We have a man who rose to enormous power, enormous influence. Imagine if we had it's hard to even imagine having a Seventh-day Adventist Christian in this kind of, it would be the equivalent today of maybe having someone vice president, maybe even more senior than that, somewhere between the vice president and the presidency. You know how prime minister works. They're kind of the guy who gets things done in a monarchy. Rose all the way up there, and yet, through all that's written about Daniel, we don't have anything that he did that disgraced the name of God. He remembered where he came from. He got to where he did through his fidelity. And when he was there, he used his influence for good. It's my prayer and my hope that every Seventh-day Adventist who runs for public office or becomes involved in public life would be a Daniel. You know, we used to sing that song, Dare to Be a Daniel. You know, it's like a kid's song, right? You don't really think about it much. Dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone. Blah, blah, blah. Try it. How many of you are going to secular universities? What's it like to go to say, I'm not coming to your party on Friday night? How does that feel? Do you do that? Do you know what I'm talking about? I went to secular university. I went to University of Virginia for an MBA and then, of course, Georgetown. Georgetown was different. I was already married then, so it wasn't really a big deal. But when I was single, it was hard. Isn't it? Maybe not for you. Maybe you have a big, large Adventist community around you. When I was at University of Virginia, I didn't know a single other student who was an Adventist. And I will tell you, it's hard to stand up in those kind of circumstances. If you're having a struggle with that, don't think that you're the only person who does. People do. But thank God, there is a power that can keep us on the right track, even in very, very hard circumstances, like Daniel. Friends, I don't want to gloss over the complexities of being in public life. Are there pressures to compromise your faith? You bet. I just had a call not too long ago from a Seventh-day Adventist who's planning to run for Congress in the state of Washington. The Democratic Party, for who knows why, has scheduled the caucus vote, which leads up to the candidacy, on Sabbath. And she's asking me, what shall I do about this? Well, I told her to do the right thing. You can't politic on Sabbath, are you right? Are you with me? You understand what I'm saying? At the same time, I'm working with some Jewish groups to see if we can get that changed. Because it doesn't seem right that a major political party would shut us out of the process. You know, some of you are a little bit uncomfortable. I know Adventists sometimes are a little bit uncomfortable with the idea of actually trying to get things changed on our behalf. Every so often I have somebody say, you know, are you trying to enforce our views on other people? My response is, we're not out there trying to create laws that say you have to keep Sabbath holy or even be vegetarians. Maybe we try to get people not to smoke on us, but, you know, we're not alone in that. All we're saying is give us a little space. Don't arbitrarily cut us out of society. It's a worthy endeavor. It's going to be difficult if you decide to go for public office. That's a little thing. What about the money involved? There's a major scandal coming down in Washington right now. I don't know how many of you have been watching this, about a lobbyist by the name of Abramov. Are you following this closely? Money going here, money going there. He'll give you trips. He'll give you money. He wants a little something back. You know, this is how is that the way a Christian can operate? It's corruption. That's what it is. It's buying and selling of influence. I'm not speaking to the particulars of that case. I'm just saying in general, money should never buy access or influence. You're not there to represent money. You represent people. And every person is just as important as another in a democracy. There are also moral questions that are very difficult to answer. You know, we struggled a little bit during Nick Miller's presentation of where we should stand on some of the great issues of today. These are not easy issues to answer. How do we balance our religious beliefs and our religious convictions with how much we should legislate, how much we should stay out of that? It's complicated. And good people can differ. I can tell you, I regularly differ with other good people. You know, we discuss it. You think that there are some simple answers out there? If you can find them in the Bible or Spirit of Prophecy where it says, this is what you should do on this particular issue, show it to me. And if you don't have a clear statement one way or the other, admit, like I do, that we have to work this through as best we can. And that's what we do. Looking at, and once again, tomorrow we're going to be talking about this a little bit more. Finally, I would suggest that those of us who do go into political life, I should ask, are any of you interested in running for political office? Okay, great, there's a few hands. Come on, Alex, you must be interested. After spending that time with me on Capitol Hill, that may have cured you, huh? You saw too much. The other final thing I'd like to just mention is that never, ever, if you do run for political office, confuse loyalty to a political party or a cause with your calling to be faithful to God. I think many people have lost their souls seeking earthly power. Do not seek earthly power. Seek to serve only as God wishes you to serve. There is a role for Seventh-day Adventist Christians in public office. We've been told that by the servant of the Lord unambiguously. We have many examples in the Bible. But we also sadly have many examples of people who've gone that route, lost their soul in the process. It's a serious endeavor. We need good men and women in public office. Not only because we want people there, but because we have something to offer. There are a million of us now in the United States, roughly, give or take. Some of those people must have the intellect, the character, the credibility, the interest, the skills to provide leadership to their communities. And if we do that, and if we do that well, the country will be a better place. The community will be a better place. And I can tell you from my position, representing us on the Hill, I would love to welcome you to Capitol Hill because we need more like you. Okay, let's say we have about 10 minutes for Q&A. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely. Very, very, very important. Same principle. All the principles I've talked about apply just as much if you're serving at the county or the state or the city level. And we have some great people serving at each one of those levels. It just happens to be a level that I'm not as well acquainted with because it's not where I do most of my work. But absolutely. And if you ever think that you're going to walk into this arena and get the top job day one, I think you might be rudely surprised. It's a great way to learn how to serve on a national stage, to serve at the local and the state level. And not only that, but state and local government have tremendous influence over the kind of services and the kind of lives that our communities have. It's a great way to serve. Very good point. Any other questions? I can't believe it. I thought I was going to be ripped apart with this. The General Youth Conference, I heard that they're really intellectually rigorous young people who are going to... Wait. Yes, sir. Sure. Yes, I'm going to be talking about the current developments in Sunday law tomorrow, first thing. And the reason why I didn't do it this evening is that's a heavy presentation. Not to say this is light. It's a little bit lighter. And I just thought at the end of the day, you guys must have had like 100 different... How many hours have you sat through today? And I wanted to just have something that didn't tax you maybe quite as much as that will. But I might be wrong on that. But absolutely, I will be. And then the second presentation tomorrow, I'll be talking about what process should our church go through in deciding whether we should take stands on abortion, on same-sex marriage, on all these incredibly hot-button issues that I know that all of you, or intelligent design in the schools, all these issues that are incredibly important hot-button issues in society, and many of them for very good reason. Okay, yes, ma'am. Yeah, I actually don't, and maybe I should know more about it. Nick, are you familiar with the group is called SDA Kinship. It's a homosexual group. I'm afraid I don't. It's not an area that I've had any... all those lawsuits about copyright and so forth, all of them predate the time when I came to work for the church. And so I wasn't involved in them, and I don't really have a lot of... I don't have a lot of insight on them other than that I probably know about as much as you do. I have so many things that I work on. If it's not just like happening, I don't get involved in it. In those cases,
that particular case.
Do you know that one?
Well, just a little bit. That there was a gay Adventist group that was using the name Seventh-day Adventist, and because it wasn't an official part of the church wanted to disassociate itself from that group and brought a lawsuit to prevent the name from being used. But we lost, at least at the trial court level. Apparently, and I've only seen the opinion described, I haven't read it myself, but apparently the judge said that because the members that were using the name had not been disfellowshipped themselves, despite being open practicing homosexuals, that it wasn't an inaccurate description. They were Seventh-day Adventists, it was a Seventh-day Adventist group, and therefore they could use it. And it sort of a little bit, it shows some of the reasoning behind church discipline, I suppose. If we don't follow through on our standards and enforce them, then the courts are saying to us, we lose the right to do that effectively, or we lose the right to define who we are and our name. So it was a troubling case.
Let me just make sure. No, let me just. Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Daniel and his four friends
were
not in office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody kept the show going while he was out in the field. You know, very interesting. Just this is an aside to an aside, I suppose. And I think you're absolutely right. I'm sure that Daniel was obviously he was keeping it going. It's a serious responsibility. When I went to visit the British Museum a few years ago now, I remember coming across something from Babylon where they'd interpreted what the writing was, and it was talking about how apparently Nebuchadnezzar was incapacitated for a period of time, and this description, and it's very interesting to see that confirmed by the ancient documents, although, frankly, if I had a choice between ancient documents dug up in the Bible for historical accuracy, I'll take the Bible. It's funny how people always measure the accuracy of the Bible against other documents instead of measuring the other documents against the accuracy of the Bible, but that's an aside of an aside. Any other questions we have? Time? Yes, sir.
I don't want to answer anybody else.
No, I just...
Nicholas Miller raised the issue about homosexuals in the church.
Mm-hmm. In sort of a concise format with all the texts and what have you supporting it. Yeah, it's a good point. Obviously the church manual, I've got to admit, I'm not the king of understanding the church manual, and it's been a long time since I've looked at it, once again, because I don't deal with internal, it's not my purview. What I deal with is dealing with a civil government, and so sure it is, but there are other folks who work with that issue, and that's why I'm not saying it's not important. What I'm saying is it's not my area of personal expertise. But I take a look. Have you got a copy? I'm sure your pastor has a copy of the church manual. You might want to look through that and just say, and go from there. Yes, sir. It's a very good question. Unfortunately, I can give it to you after I finish. It's in the Book of Education, but I'm pulling it out of something that I wrote where I quoted it and didn't put the
people
too. Yeah, it's in a couple different places. Yeah, I'll give you the key terms. Whenever I forget where it is, I just go in the website, and the terms I often look for is legislative, deliberative. If you put legislative and deliberative, I don't think there's too many quotes that have both those words in them. It's not like your regular writing process, so. But I will be happy to. I also have it on my hard drive. So there we have it. I'd be very happy to talk, particularly with those of you who have an interest in this area. And I hopefully will see many of you back tomorrow morning to discuss Sunday laws in an age of freedom. Are we really close to having Sunday laws? What would it take to get Sunday laws enacted? What would it take to close Exxon down or General Motors one day a week? Is it going to be an easy thing? Are there secret Sunday laws pending? Tomorrow morning, bright and early, we'll discuss it. Thank you so much.
For additional CDs of this message or for other presentations by these speakers and others associated with ACM, you may contact us as follows. In the United States and Canada, dial our toll-free order line, 800-233-4450. International calls, dial 717-652-7000. Fax orders, dial 717-652-9050. Our internet email address is info@americancassette.org. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. Our entire catalog is online, and we accept MasterCard, Visa, and Discover credit cards. Maintaining the integrity of the Three Angels' messages since 1975, American Cassette Ministries, a 501c3 nonprofit ministry, is dependent upon your generous tax-deductible contributions in order to maintain our low prices and to continue providing you the finest genuine Adventist preaching until Jesus comes. He's coming soon.